Our speakers today are both Cookeville boys, come down from Tennessee representing big today down here in Alabama. And I've had the privilege of having a few conversations with both of them, and they're going to deliver their message their way. So we got Chris F. coming up first.
I'm Chris. I'm an addict. Man, I'm glad to be here and glad to be clean. This is my first convention, man, and first time I've been to Decatur. And I'm just grateful for the invite, man. What an honor. I got clean July the 11th, 2017. Like Josiah said, I'm from Cookeville, born and raised. Man, I come from a great family. Hard-working family. My dad worked for the post office. He'd go into work at 2 o'clock in the morning, get off at 10. He had a parts store. He'd work at that parts store from 10 to 12 or 1. He'd come home, take a nap. We lived on a farm. He'd go work on that farm that afternoon, come home, eat supper with us, do it all again. We've done that for 30 years. My mother, she's a beautician. She'd get up for daylight and tease up these old ladies' hair and, you know, put them under them big old dryers and give them permanents and all that shit, you know. And she done that 3 days a week so she could buy us clothes, so we'd have nice clothes, so we'd look good on the outside, you know, no matter what was going on the inside. I got a brother and a sister. Our brother, actually the sheriff in our county, and my brother-in-law just got sworn in as the chief of police. So hell, if I was running wild, man, I'd be running and gunning in my county. But I've used all the get out of jail free cards already, I expect. But man, we grew up, like I said, in a great family. They, you know, religion was a thing at my house, and it worked for the people at my house most of the time. But for me as a kid, I seen it working for other people, but I just couldn't get it to work for me. I remember some of my earliest memories. My grandmother lived across the holler from us, and I remember going over to her house when I was a little kid. And she had this cough syrup, and it had whiskey and honey with a little bit of lemon in it. And I remember that first drink I took of that. Dude, that warm feeling that come all over me. And my mom later on said every time we'd top that hill going to my grandma's, I'd start coughing. So I've been manipulating from way back, man. That's what I did, man, is just manipulating. Been in recovery several times, man, and I know it's a disease of the mind, body, and spirit. I'd come in long enough for my body to heal up, my mind to get a little bit better. But this spiritual stuff, man, I never could tap into that, or I never was willing to actually try it, you know, because I was always a little bit smarter than anybody else coming in the rooms. And when I got there, nobody used like me, nobody was like me. I was that terminal uniqueness, you know, that's what got me. Until, man, you know, I got where I guess a lot of us here had, man, I was settled to be a little bit less miserable clean than I was using. I fucking run out of money, man. I run out of money. I run out of trust from everybody around me. You know, I say my wife, you know, was going to leave me, but I was going to be the one leaving. And I say she's going to get half. She's going to get the inside and I was going to get the outside. I mean, that's how it's going to go at my house. I knew what was fixing to happen. This last time I come in, man, I knew there was going to have to be something different, man. I was beat down enough that I started taking suggestions, you know, from my sponsor. And I started reading that basic text. I read in there, it says, based on our experience, we believe that every addict, including the potential addict, suffers from a disease of mind, body, and spirit. We were in the grip of a hopeless dilemma, the solution of which is spiritual in nature. So if I'm working a program, a spiritual program, that's the only way I got for me to combat this disease of addiction. You know, spiritual path, man, that's a broad topic. Sounds like a whole lot to speak on, you know. And I thought, what? You know, the question is, what's your spiritual path? Well, what is a spiritual path? You know, and it says in our literature, you know, spirituality is my relationship with reality. And I looked up known. It says a conscious journey toward the light. And in our literature, it talks in a couple of readings, maybe in that gray book, about the members that were here before me that are these spiritual beacons of light. You know, these illuminated, you know, things that keep me in check. And I thought about when I came in here, those people that's here before me, man, that light they were showing me towards this spiritual path, it was a light of, man, they were free. They were happy. I couldn't relate to that. The only added, you know, the only emotion I had when I come in here was fuck you. You know what I mean? That I was miserable. I had nothing for nobody. But I seen these people enjoying life, and I didn't think that was going to ever happen for me. But I started hanging around them, man, and I started to get to know them. I started following and doing the things they did, taking suggestions, going out to eat, doing all these things. And then, you know, I look back in my life today, and these spiritual lights and these beacons that I see from other folks in NA, it's usually stuff that pisses me off, because it's those people that tell me the truth. You know, they tell me the truth about what's going on in my life, whether I like it or not, and it bothers me, because I don't like nobody coming at me with truth if I'm not practicing it. So I'm gonna give some examples, man. I'm not real good with definitions. I just kind of like, I'm that guy. Don't give me directions, man. Give me a picture. So I'm gonna try to paint a picture of you, maybe of my spiritual path, what it's looked like, maybe what it feels like. I was talking about these spiritual beacons. One of them his name's David F. He's got 27, 28 years. He's a character, man. He's a guy that'll tell you the truth. He's somebody, if you come up to him and you're like, man, you know, I've had a terrible day. Nothing's going right. I don't know what to do. And he'll look at you and say, well, man, at least you didn't use. You'll be all right. Or if you come at him and you say, man, I've had a terrible day. It sucks, but I didn't use. And he'll be like, you keep that fucking attitude and you will. You know what I mean? He's one of them guys that'll tell you straight like you need to hear it. So I was sharing, we had a Just for Today, and it was about balancing NA with your family. You know, if I'm going to a meeting 5 days a week and I'm hitting two at night and I've got service commitments on the weekend, my family don't know if I'm in recovery, if I'm still doing dope, because I ain't ever home. So I'm sharing, you know, some of that good sharing shit. I'm up here just sharing like crazy at this meeting and saying, you know, I don't have any problem practicing spiritual principles in the rooms. I'll do service work. I'll make coffee. I'll set up the chairs. I'm sponsoring guys. I'll hug an addict when they come in the room, and I'll love all over them. But now, as soon as I leave this meeting and I go home, my wife's going to be sitting in her chair on TikTok. She's been there for about 2 hours. And the first thing she's going to do is ask me to take them dogs out. And I'm going to get madder than hell. I got to take the dogs out. You know, I'm sharing, and so I'm saying, you know, I can practice spiritual principles here, you know, in these rooms, but it's hard for me at home. I think the other fellowship talks about that too. So I've got an excuse for it. So David F. starts out his share. Well, now just for me, so if anybody starts a share out and says, now just for me, that means I'm fucking talking to you. You know what I mean? You know that. He says, just for me, he said, If I'm not capable of practicing these spiritual principles at home, then obviously I haven't learned them in the rooms. So when I hit that guy next to me, I said, he's fucking sharing me. You know, I was torn all to pieces. My leg was shaking. But that was that beacon of light, man, that's pushing me towards this spiritual path that I need to be on. I got to have these members checking me, man, showing me where it's at. You know, and I do that like I'll come home and my wife won't be there maybe before she gets off work and my day off, and I'll come home and I'll clean the kitchen and I'll wash them dishes and I'll sit down on the couch and I'll wait for her to come home. She'll sit her purse down on the island. I know she's seen the kitchen. She'll sit down in her TikTok chair and I'll be going, come on, tell me how good that looks, you know, say something. And I'm saying it in my head, and finally I say, hey, I clean the kitchen. Did you see it? She said, yeah, I do that every day. You know, I ain't that big a deal, man, but I'm all I think about. You know, that's it for me. Another guy, Josh T., he's my sponsor now. But before he was my sponsor, I come to him after a meeting, man, and I was whining and crying. So my wife ain't petting on me and loving me like I want her to. She don't brag on me like I want her to. She's just not real touchy-feely. And he said, do you do those things to her? And I said, no. He said, so what you're saying is you're not willing to treat her the way you want her to treat you. And I said, damn you, man. Why'd I ask you that? You know, so what I done, I started praying at night with my wife. And that has drawn us closer. And I quit doing it, but I'm going to need to start back. You know what I mean? I mean, it's crazy. Something works for me, man, and I stop doing it. That's my biggest, that's been my MO in recovery and in just in general, man. Let's see, man. I was talking to an addict, man, and like in this flat book, the workbook, it's towards the end of the first step, like question 155 or something. I don't know, you know. But it says, what do you hear in NA or from your sponsor that you don't agree with? And it immediately came to me. My sponsor would always share that the path gets smaller the longer I stay in recovery. And I'm like, man, that's bullshit. I'm dying. I ain't slept in 40 days. You know, ain't nobody gets me. Nobody trusts me. I just don't agree with that. Well, me and my sponsor today were talking about that. And, you know, that road of recovery, I believe it's pretty wide today because I got choices while I'm on this spiritual path. You know what I mean? I can make some choices, and I can veer off that path. And it's pretty wide as long as I don't use. But I'm going to kind of give you a picture, to me, of the first time I feel like I set foot on a spiritual path. I had about 3 months clean. I had a guy that was the first person that hugged me. He worked in treatment. He gave me a phone call one day. He said, hey, man, I've got a guy who's wanting to get into treatment. He's got a wife and 3 daughters, and he just don't think he can leave them and go to treatment. And he says, I know you've been there and you've done that. Can you call him? Man, I had about 3 months clean, and I had nothing going on, man. I was wandering on that road of recovery, but I was struggling. I was meeting with my sponsor and working some steps. But I'd heard people talk about stuff like this, and they always said they prayed before they made that phone call. So I prayed, and I made that phone call. Changed my life. I called him. I don't remember anything I said. Nothing I said. But I remember when I hung that phone up, I had a feeling come across me like I had never had in my entire life. I'd never set foot on that spiritual path before, but I had 2 feet in it at that moment. I was completely on that spiritual path. I can't describe that feeling, man. I cannot describe it. I immediately called up my dad. He was 75 years old at the time. He's 82 today. He's my biggest fan in recovery, and he's the person I hurt the most and did the most damage to, probably. I called him. I went to him, and we hugged. I was crying. He said, I knew there had to be a purpose. And boom, that word purpose hit me. You know, purpose. Path, spiritual path, a purpose. You know, I kind of correlated that. I've really felt like God was there to help me get this guy clean. Because he came in about a year later, come over to Bobby's house, the priority house, come over to his house, and he asked me to be his sponsor. I said, man, he's got me clean, save this guy's life. So what I done was I give, like any good new sponsor does, I give him every piece of literature we had to offer. I told him things to do that I had no idea what to do. And I put it on him. Well, he didn't make it. They found him dead in his truck in a truck stop. And that's when I realized that, you know, God didn't put him in my life for me to save his life. He put him in my life to save my life. And my recovery has never been the same since that. I got that taste of it. You know, I was working at... I had an appointment I had to do. I was working security at a church, of all things, if you can believe that. But I was walking down this sidewalk, this big road, and I kept walking this same path back and forth on it, man. And that's what it felt like to me, man. That small path I was walking back and forth was that spiritual path. But this wider road was that road of recovery, man. And I wonder on this road of recovery until I can feel my foot hit that spiritual path. And man, that's like fire when it hits that. What I do in recovery, man, is I hang on long enough until I hit that path. You know, and I've got faith today that I know I'm going to hit that path because I keep hitting it. I've got trust in the power greater than myself that he's going to get me there. because he has. I have to switch it up a lot in recovery, man. Spiritual things that I do. I switched it up a lot. I was talking to another addict, you know, Bobby, on the way down here. I had to switch it up when I was using. You know, I knew that I couldn't smoke crack for the rest of my life. It just wasn't doable for me. Staring out a window, whispering at people that wasn't fucking there. So I switched it up. I was already doing something different, you know. So I've had to do that in recovery. And I do some crazy shit, man. Because, like a lot of addicts, man, when I got clean, you know, you hear it a lot, I put down the spoon and picked up the fork. I gained about 65, 80 pounds, and I got diverticulitis. And, dude, I went through that like 6 times in a year because I'd eat so much, I'd know I was going to get it, so I'd say, fuck it, just let's eat the rest of it, you know. And I just eat uncontrollably. Well, I come up with this deal, man, I ain't going to do that no more. I've had enough pain in my life that I'm going to do something different. So I get up of a morning, barefooted, and go straight outside and ground myself on the ground. I got 3 dogs, so it's like Russian roulette, you know, where I'm going to be standing. But when it's cold, it feels good. You know what I mean? And I do these breathing exercises. I'll do 30 deep breaths, and then I'll hold it for a hard breath. And I do that 3 times. Then I go inside, and I've got one of these. I first started out taking a cold shower. I did that for a month. I'll take a cold shower, and when it's 8 degrees, cold shower's real, man. I mean, coming out of them pipes in the water, you take one in the summer and you take one now, you can tell a big difference. So I'd take that cold shower. Well, I did that for a month, and I got me one of these cold plunge tubs. I got a sponsee that works at Bat Pool and Spa Depot, so he hooked me up on a used but new one. Anyway, we don't talk about that. But anyway, I'll get in that tub, man, for about 3 to 5 minutes and do some breathing exercise in it. It just dumps the serotonin, man, and I love to feel good. You know what I mean? I eat clean, man. I don't eat any white bread, no sugar, none of that stuff, man, and I feel amazing. But I can do this stuff so much that it's unhealthy. One night I went to bed and my toes was real tender. It's like I'd cut them on the sheets. I couldn't figure out what it was. I was looking at them, couldn't figure it out. I woke up that next morning and I go, I've got neuropathy. They're going to give me gabapentin and I done fucking relapsed. You know what I mean? I done had myself all tore up. I done got neuropathy in my feet. Well, it hit me, man. You know, you're doing 2 cold plunges and a shower a day. I had frostbite on my feet. So I took a break. But I'd be lying to you if I said that a couple of toes wasn't numb right now, because I'm still fucking doing 2 a day. You know what I mean? Because it feels good, man. This program has given me opportunities, man, to be of service to other addicts. Not only that, man, to be of service to my family. I got 2 daughters. I got a 15-year-old, and I got one fixing to turn 18. They're beautiful, and they both got boyfriends, and God dang, I'm struggling, you know. Struggling, man. I got my 18-year-old's is my baby. She's the one that I kept in the basement with me as a buffer so I could use. If I had her with me, you know, I didn't have my wife. Nobody was punching down on me, no pressure. And I can remember, man, I would use from the time I woke up till I'd get about a little bit of relief about 10:30, 11 o'clock at night. And this little girl would stay downstairs with me, and all she wanted me to do is watch TV with her. We'd watch American Pickers or, you know, something fun like that. She was like me, and I can remember using, and she kept saying, Daddy, come on out. Come on out. Let's watch TV. And I'll be out in a minute. And I finally got to where I had a little relief, man, and I thought I could come sit down with her and watch TV. And I walked in my basement and I opened the door, and she's sitting straight up on the couch, asleep, waiting on me. Couldn't wait no longer, just went to sleep, sitting straight up. And I sit down beside her, man, and just bawled my eyes out. And I said, I'll never get clean. I love my kids, man. I loved them. But I said, I'll never be able to get clean. This is just what it's going to be for me. You know, and thank good God, my higher power, man, he had a different outlook for me, man. You know, this program, like I said, I try to practice it in all my affairs. I get to be a part of the home group, man. We got a great home group, a lot of unity in there. I'm the treasurer there, have been for fucking 5 years or something. I wish somebody would take that shit over. I'm getting tired of it. I'm the alternate chair for area, and then alternate RCM, I guess, for the region. And it's all new, man. We just now started. We ain't been a part of the area but for a couple of years. Hohenwald sent somebody to us that has some kind of fire up his ass, and we're about ready to send him back somewhere else, like somebody else was talking. We may send him home, but no, man, he come to this fellowship when we needed it most. I want to thank y'all who's been a part of his recovery. Me and Bobby's sponsor left. I had about 5 years clean, and he had 35 years clean, he's got 35 years now. He had 28 when I come in. He left and went to another fellowship. And there ain't no big dogs or little dogs in the NA, but I thought we'd fall apart without this man. I was at a spot in my recovery where I wasn't sure if I needed to follow him or if I needed to stay. I was thinking about leaving, man. And once again, I go to my dad, who's not one of us, and I start telling him about it, and he's like, well, why would you quit doing something that's working? You know, sometimes I just need some outside eyes on me, man. So I stuck and stayed, and I was sitting in a meeting, and I seen this guy's name wrote down on H&I, and I didn't know who he was. So I went to a meeting, and I'm sitting down, and had a sponsee sit beside me, and this guy that's speaking next door shares. And he gets done sharing. I look over at my sponsee. I said, well, this motherfucker's got it figured out, don't he? He knows what's going on, you know, just kind of like that. Well, I got to talking to him, and, dude, he has been my running mate, dude. God sent him there for me. I was wanting to get involved and start this area, but COVID hit. You know, and we were kind of in a rogue home group. We were actually a part of that area, and they've moved the seat to Cookeville now. Our home group's growing, man. NA's growing. We're loving it. We're having just the best time, man. You know, I'll close out here shortly. I'm probably getting down on time. I forgot to look at the watch, Josiah. You know, I got 1 minute left. Damn, son, I got some good shit here. All right. No, I'm gonna close with this right here. I'll say this, and I heard this when I first come in from a guy, and I didn't never figure out what he said. But he said, this program will give you the ability to love so hard that it hurts. I didn't know what he's talking about. I know what he's talking about today. If you don't know what he's talking about, keep coming back and you'll find out. That's all I got.
Man, Chris F., good stuff, good stuff. All right, Bobby. Bobby from Cookville's next, and here you go.
Hello, I'm Bobby. I'm an addict.
Hey, Bobby.
Nervous, but grateful to be here. And I should have went first, man. You said a lot of stuff I was going to say. My story ain't nobody can tell it but me, man. So I'm going to... The first time I come to a meeting was 1993. I wanted to... Been coming around for, 30... over 30 years. My clean date is January 12, 2001. Chris shared a little bit about his upbringing, so I will too. Man, great job, by the way. I really, really enjoyed that. Enjoyed the other two speakers earlier this morning. Really loved the passion, man. Chris told me, he said, man, you need to come to this. He said, it'll fire you up, and it already has. Oftentimes when I'm asked to speak, I got to remember, man, I'm just in front of a bunch of addicts just like me. And it ain't about me, you know. I was raised in a one red light town called Gainesboro, Tennessee. And growing up, my dad was an electrician. My mother worked in a factory. I'm so proud of my parents. The longer I've stayed clean, the more I understand, you know, how hard they work to provide and do things. Of course, none of us know it when we're young. I come from a loving home, and they my earliest memories were it was security. If you want to go to college, it's paid for. We'll have you a place to live. When you get 16, we're going to provide you with a car. We'll always be there for you as long as you do the right thing. Went to church. And I won't say this topic's on spiritual path, but I don't think that has anything to do with religion. And I learned that in recovery. And I'm not a big religious guy. I ain't been to church in many years. I tried that on and off when I first got clean. Not for me. I found my home here in the NA. Growing up, I was made to go to church. And when I was 12, I got to make the decision if I was going to keep going. So I quit. I started using when I was 12. I started knowing everything when I was 12. I've worked with a lot of addicts over the years, and a bunch of them have said, I started using when I was about 12. I was in sixth grade. I mean, I got kids now. I got four kids. It would just break my heart if they started using in sixth grade. I mean, I thought I was grown. I always wanted to be grown. I remember growing up when I was little, when we would play, I played like I was grown. That's what I played. We play cops and robbers. I was a robber, I guarantee you. I never wanted to be the cops. But I was pretty smart. I mean, I played sports. I didn't get no scholarships, but I always started. I made A's and B's and C's in school. I done all right. I had a lot of friends. But when I started using, all the red flags come up. Changed my friends, stopped playing sports. My grades went to shit. I started running with a lot of older people. So I had consequences from the beginning. Everybody was worried about me. And so my parents, and I had come from a big family, and I was the only boy. I probably had 20 girl cousins. All of them protected me and took care of me and hung on every word. I say that to say a lot of times I would come home from a binge or whatever, and the whole family would be there to intervene. Bobby, you need to sit down. We're going to have a talk, you know. So I started off having talks, going to psychologists. When I was 15, I got my first DUI. This may not sound like it has anything to do with the spiritual path, but I believe I've been on a spiritual path since birth. And I think that every experience, now y'all are part of my spiritual path. I mean, the hugs I've got and the people I've met, you know, every interaction somehow connects to that, I think. I went along, man, and I ain't going to tell my story, in detail, but it progressed. I stayed in trouble with the law. I dropped out of high school. Broke my family's heart, man, you know. I went to work, just labor work, block layers, factory, stuff like that. Done that for years. My dad died when I was 18, just massive heart attack, just fell over, 48 years old. And I've always had kind of a weird thing, I guess a phobia about that, man, kind of struggled with that. I've always been a worrier. A lot of addicts shared that with me too. It's good to belong to something where you can relate so much to the people that surround you, you know. Went to treatment my first time when I was in 93 and got me a treatment relationship. And Man, I thought my counselors was trying to get my girlfriend that I had made. I mean, I was paranoid as hell, man. I was a kid, man. I quit going. Tried to get her to quit going, you know. Just very unhealthy stuff, man. My perspective is so messed up. But it was weird because the guy Chris was talking about was later become my sponsor. It was a spiritual connection there, whether I wanted to admit it or not. I don't even think I knew it. His name's Will. And I would see him in the next, over the next few years as I was in and out of the program then. Once I went to treatment, well, they say a head full of NA and an arm full of dope will ruin your using, and it sure did, and I think that's spiritual, my using was done ruined anyway, but the people in recovery meant a lot to me then, man. They made an impression on me, Will and Lisa. I mean, I won't mention the names, you probably wouldn't know them anyway, but I would remember things they'd said, and as I was out paying some kind of consequence, I would think of them, and so I was in treatment from 93 to 2001, four inpatients, four outpatients, IOP programs, and a methadone clinic for a year, and I threw away every relationship I ever had, every job I'd ever had I'd lost. My mother had a restraining order on me. She had for 2 years. I'd broke my family. They didn't have a lot, but they had more than me, so I would go to them. I relied on them to keep me up, keep my habit up. When I got clean, I was 27. I'm 51 now. And it's been a hell of a trip, man, in recovery. I think of the shape I was in when I got clean. My mom had a restraining order on me. I didn't have any driver's license, no vehicle, no job, nowhere to live, hepatitis B, hepatitis C. scared to death. Had a lot to unlearn. Looked up to drug dealers, and they were my idols, and it was hard to let all that go. I went to treatment at Buffalo Valley January 17th of 01. This was a moment for me. Chris talked about that phone call, and my moment, I've had a lot of moments, but this one really means a lot to me. I was at New Life Lodge, and 10 Care was going through a lot of changes then, and so it was hard to get treatment, and they gave me 5 days at New Life Lodge, but they was going to send me on to Buffalo Valley. And so my mother, who had been through hell and wasn't even supposed to be around me, she had a restraining order against me. She was breaking the law by, hauling me to treatment or whatever, but I called her and I said, "Mom, 10 Care ain't gonna pay for no more treatment." And I knew I was lying. I could have went right on to Buffalo Valley, and we were about, and Cook was about 2 hours from where New Life Lodge was. She come got me, her and my ex-wife now, we got about halfway back, and man, I'll never forget it. We were coming through Nashville about Mount Juliet, and I was smoking in her new car, and she didn't let nobody smoke in her car, but I was, because rules didn't apply to me. And we was going there under the lights. It's mist and rain, January 17th, and they were in the front talking. And after all I'd put these people through, they had some, I realized that they had no reason to believe me, and that they didn't, but that they loved me and they wanted to believe me. And I swear it changed me right then. We got to Lebanon and stopped to eat. and although my little scheme had worked, whatever that means, I told them that I had lied and I could have went on to treatment. And that, I really believe that in that moment things began to change. I'd always heard if I'd pray in the morning and ask God for another day clean, go to a meeting, use a sponsor, read literature, and thank God at night, no matter how my day went, that I had a good shot at this. And when I got to Buffalo Valley, I had a couple of roommates, and you know how we are. Hell, I kind of felt funny about praying in front of anybody, but I done it. And for me, spiritual stuff is not always a... I had spiritual stuff confused with good feelings. You know what I'm saying? To me, spirituality is painful. And, you know, there's something about a program and a set of principles so strong that can enable an addict like me to deny himself something that's very powerful, man. My recovery's been great. I've had a great recovery. After I had 4 years, I went back to college. You know, I'd got my GED, went back to college, got working in the field. You know what I mean? It's good to be here with people that I don't have to work with every day, by the way. I like it. Not that I ain't grateful to get to work with them, but, you know, it's always good to meet fresh faces and get the same message from different people. I went back, I got married, I had my firstborn. None of my kids has ever seen me use. And I'm real grateful for that. I ain't been a perfect dad, I can tell you that. I see a lot of people come in, they say, man, you know, if I could do this, if I'd have done this. Talking about their kids, and I say, man, I know it hurts to have lost your children or to have them misplaced right now or whatever, but you would have made mistakes anyway, man. I've made a bunch of them, you know. And recovery to me, man, is about getting butt naked, buddy. I appreciate that. It's about getting honest, man. I realize, and it's a spiritual thing to me, to realize that if I ever get too good to have a bad day in Narcotics Anonymous, I might as well leave. Because it's not about saving my face. Literature says it's about saving my ass, you know what I mean? And I'll go further with that. I mean, even if I cause my bad day, I want a safe place to come share about it. Because I've made decisions in recovery I've caused a lot of my own troubles. And it's been a learning thing as I've went. You know, I've been clean, like I said, over 24 years. The road does get narrow in a way, but I know what Chris meant when he said that, you know, there are more choices, and in many ways it does get, it's easier to practice the principles than it used to be. I didn't even know what a spiritual principle was when I got clean. To me now, it's, you know, I still, if I'm tempted to lie, when I tell the truth, I practice spiritual principle. There's many things that I deny myself. My sponsor, Will, he left, and not only for another fellowship, he didn't leave for even the other fellowship. He has went to a completely different route, and that's been painful. That's hard to admit. Why the hell would I let where a other man went be painful to me? I always wanted to be hard, and I didn't want to show any. One of the hardest things I've ever admitted is that I'm hurting. Man, that's been real tough for me. I mean, and it ain't no big deal. I mean, you know, I had an autistic son. He was born in 2007, and then, of course, found it out 18 months later, all that. That was... he'll be 18 in March. And man, that's been a painful thing. I've shared about that. I've come in meetings and just let it go, and then somebody start talking about gratitude, man, or something, man. I just get... I've had to struggle through... I've often said, if I wanted an excuse to leave this program, I got a room full of them, because I can find something wrong with every damn body and everything if that's what I'm looking for. And it's spiritual to me. Part of my spiritual path, I like to kind of stay on the topic, is to deny myself that, man. To when my mind starts to do that, just stop and look at the truth, man, and look at for the good in other people. To believe that other addicts may possibly have my best interest in mind. See, I never would believe nobody. If they said they loved me, I didn't believe it, you know. Because love to me was doing what I wanted you to do, you know, and doing for me. That ain't necessarily love. Sometimes love's not doing for me. Let me experience the pain, you know. When I got clean, the big, you know how when you're in a small town, meetings kind of follow a little trends or something. It was boundaries. I walked in my first meeting after I got out of Buffalo Valley, and the topic was boundaries. I thought, what the hell, man? I mean, I didn't know that you know, learning how to live life on life's terms entails so much, you know. Chris has been a big help for me, man. He's kind of pushed me. I've got back involved in NA. I mean, I've made meetings the whole time. I made a lot of AA meetings for several years. I got a divorce at 15 years clean. That was messy. My wife was in the program. That was messy. And she, her sponsor, who's dead now, told her that people go to AA to get sober and go to NA to get laid. And I don't know if y'all have ever heard that. I never heard that. But that pissed me off, man. I kind of didn't hang out in NA for several years, but I've started coming back. And it's really helped me in my recovery. I make a noon group in Cookeville several times a week. And I don't know if I talk 25 minutes. If I hadn't.
If you're done, you're done. You're
close.
Close?
You got about 5, 10 to eat up if you want.
Yeah. Well, I'm just glad I didn't walk in place the whole time. No, guys, I really appreciate y'all. I wrote down some stuff, didn't even get it out. It's hard to talk about a spiritual path, because it's everything's that to me. You know what I mean? I remember my sponsor telling me, and this happened, that you'll know you've grown spiritually when it brings you true joy to see others do well, you know. Because, man, I would sideline your ass back in the day if I could. I mean, I get you so fucked up, lead you the other, ask me for directions, and you going to other. I didn't want nobody messing with anything that even might be mine. You know what I mean? Like, if I had a shot at it, I was going to deter you, man. And I guess that's being selfish. See, I equated being selfish with, you know, I had friends I'd give my last beer, man. You know what I mean? So I didn't consider myself selfish. But I was, you know. Last hit of crack, you know, you bring that up. I had them days. You know, but yeah, it brings me true joy to see others be happy and get this program. I've sponsored a lot of guys over the years, and it helps me much more than it helps them. And I say that because that's kind of what everybody says. They say the opposite. So we really are all connected, I think, you know. But Chris mentioned, you know, the, those lights that when you come in, the guys that's been there a long time, and it does change, man. It has for me, like, it's about seeing a newcomer, you know, get a year clean or pick up at 30, 60, 90, 6 months, you know. I about know when, man, because it excites me to see their lives changing. And I love y'all, man. I mean that in the NA way. I appreciate you asking me to come, and I'm glad it's over.
I'm Josiah, I'm an addict. We got like 10 minutes, man. Let's anybody got a burning